Patriotism is a much contested moral sentiment. Some view it as an unassailable virtue, while others see it as a source of mindless obedience, chauvinism, and war. Some contemporary philosophers say the boundaries of nations are morally irrelevant, accidents of history with no rightful claim on our conscience. Mark Twain once wrote about two kinds of patriotism, monarchical patriotism and republican patriotism. In the one case, the government and the king may rightfully furnish you their notions of patriotism. In the other, neither the government nor the entire nation is privileged to dictate to any individual what the form of his patriotism shall be. Twain goes on to say that the gospel of the monarchical patriotism is the king can do no wrong. We have adopted it with all its servility, with an unimportant change in the wording. Our country, right or wrong, we have thrown away the most valuable asset we had, the individual's right to oppose both flag and country. When he believed them to be in the wrong, we have thrown it away with all that was really respectable about the grotesque and laughable word patriotism. How we define and then embody patriotism does matter. Historian Howard Zinn writes, "In times of war, the definition of patriotism becomes a matter of life and death for Americans and the world." We are living in an era when the United States is waging an endless war on a global battlefield. September 11th consecrated a national holy day, and the spectacle of the collapsing twin towers enshrined to sanctify the power of those pledged to be its avengers. So writes Sheldon Wolin. And out of the rubble emerged a dangerous religion, a theology of empire under President Bush, says Jim Wallace. After the attacks, the White House carefully scripted a religious service in which President Bush declared a war on terrorism from the pulpit of the National Cathedral. "Our responsibility to history is already clear," he preached, "to answer these attacks and rid the world of evil." A televised national liturgy affirming the divine character of the nation's wars and the new war against terrorism ended triumphantly with the battle hymn of the Republic. That Bush launched the battle to rid the world of evil with a song written in 1861 by a prominent Unitarian, Julia Ward Howe, is an embarrassing reminder that even figures from our own past have confused patriotism with nationalism and fallen short of the prophetic imperative. The historian of militarism, Alfred Bax, says that one of the main considerations in psychological preparedness for future wars is nationalism, or chauvinism, the identification of every subject with the nation in peace and war. The Russian writer Leo Tolstoy rallied against the stupidity of patriotism. To destroy war, destroy patriotism. The Unitarian and Universalist traditions include conflicting views on patriotism. Speaking on September 18, 1814, when an invasion by the British forces was apprehended at Boston, the Reverend William Ellery Channing, made famous by the 1819 sermon Unitarian Christianity, preached on the duties of the citizen. "This is a time when we should all bring clearly and strongly to our minds our duties to our country, and should cherish a strong and ardent attachment to the public good. The claims of country," Channing preached, "have been felt and obeyed even in the rudest ages of society. The community to which we belong is commended by our very nature to our affection and service. Christianity," he said, "in enjoining a disinterested and benevolent spirit, emits and sanctions this sentiment, this attachment to the land of our fathers, the land of our nativity." Now, Channing did offer some qualifications Patriotism demands that our patriotism be purified from every mixture of injustice toward foreign nations. Within this limit, he said, we cannot too ardently attach ourselves to the welfare of our country. In that day, in that moment, he preached, this present moment calls us to fervent patriotism. Now, writing in his journal just 10 years later, Ralph Waldo Emerson expressed a different view. I confess, I'm a little cynical on some topics. And when a whole nation is roaring patriotism at the top of its voice, I'm fain to explore the cleanness of its hands and purity of its heart. I have generally found, Emerson wrote, the gravest and most useful citizens are not the easiest provoked to swell the noise, though they may be punctual at the polls. And less than three decades after Emerson penned these words, on the eve of the Civil War, 1852, Frederick Douglass, a former slave and leader in the abolitionist movement who allied himself with many prominent Unitarians of the day, revealed the dirty hands and impure hearts when he spoke these prophetic words to a patriotic 4th of July gathering in Rochester, New York. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty an unholy license, your national greatness swelling vanity, your shouts of liberty and equality hollow mockery. A thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. There is not a nation on the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of the United States at this very hour. And as for Julia Ward Howe, once exposed to the actual carnage of the Civil War, expressed a more mature patriotism. In 1870, 9 bloody years after the dream that inspired the fervently patriotic battle hymn, Howe abandoned triumphalism for remorse and demand and wrote a Mother's Day proclamation. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm the sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. In the years before the First World War, the feminist and anarchist Emma Goldman traveled the country and gave many lectures on patriotism. What is patriotism, she asked? Is it love of one's birthplace, the place of childhood, recollections and hopes, dreams and aspirations? Is it the place where in childlike naivete we would watch the fleeting clouds and wonder why we too could not run so swiftly? Indeed, she says, conceit, arrogance, and egotism are the essentials of patriotism. Patriotism assumes that our globe is divided into little spots, each one surrounded by an iron gate. Those who have had the fortune of being born in one particular spot consider themselves better, nobler, grander, more intelligent than the living beings inhabited any other spot, and therefore it is the duty of every one living in that chosen spot to fight, kill, and die in an attempt to impose his superiority on all the others. The tension between contrasting views of patriotism seems to lie in dilemmas of loyalty. Dilemmas Michael Sandel, Harvard professor, takes up in his book, Justice, What's the Right Thing to Do? In chapter 9 of that book, Sandel considers patriotism the chapter, What Do We Owe One Another? Dilemmas of Loyalty. Sandel asks, do citizens have obligations to one another that go beyond the duties they have to other people in the world? And if they do, can these obligations be accounted for on the basis of consent alone? Sandel dialogues in the text with Jean-Jacques Rousseau, an ardent defender of patriotism, who argues that communal attachments and identities are necessary supplements to our universal humanity. Rousseau says, "It seems that the sentiment of humanity evaporates and weakens in being extended over to the entire world, and that we cannot be affected by the calamities of Japan the way we are by those of European people." Rousseau, writing as a European. "Interest and commiseration," Rousseau says, "must somehow be limited and restrained to be active." Patriotism, he suggests, is that limiting principle that intensifies fellow feeling. Rousseau says it is good to think that the humanity concentrated among fellow citizens takes on the new force through the habit of seeing each other and through the common interest that unites them. In this way, Rousseau sounds a lot like Channing. "The community to which we belong is commended by our very nature to our affection and service." But Sandel asks if fellow citizens are bound by ties of loyalty and commonality, does this mean they owe more to one another than outsiders? Rousseau responds in this imaginary dialogue, "Do we want people to be virtuous? Let us begin then by making them love their country. But how can they love it if their country means nothing more to them than it does to foreigners, allotting to them only what it cannot refuse to anyone?" So Sandel asks, "Are U.S. taxpayers more responsible for needy citizens than for those who live elsewhere? Do U.S. citizens have special responsibility to meet the needs of our own citizens that does not extend to everyone, everywhere, throughout the world? And is this distinction morally defensible, especially considering who we are in this religious community, in covenant, to affirm and promote certain principles? I'm speaking of our commitment to world community and justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Held against these standards, patriotism may seem to be just favoritism, prejudice, or tribalism. Does our religious covenant mean we should be more generous than we are in providing foreign aid to assist people in developing countries? As Sandel points out, the inequality of nations complicates the case for national community. If all countries had comparable wealth, and if every person were a citizen of some country or other, the obligation to take special care of one's own people would not pose a problem, at least from the standpoint of justice. But in a world with vast disparities between rich and poor countries, the claims of community can be in tension with the claims of equality. And we see today the volatile issue of immigration reflecting this tension. So can, or perhaps should, Unitarian Universalists be patriots in these times? Soon after the attacks of September 11th, the Reverend Forrest Church, the minister at the time of All Souls Unitarian Universalist in New York City, answered this question with a resounding yes. "From the outset of our history," Church writes, "American patriots have challenged the nation to tune its actions to the key of its ideals. To the extent that the United States betrays its own ideals, American patriotism holds the nation under judgment. Unlike American nationalism," Church says, "American patriotism is unique. The United States is the only nation in the world that is founded on a creed, the Declaration of Independence, the notion that all men, all people are created equal, summed up in the national motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. This creed is universal, not parochial." Church says, in the aftermath of September 11th, beholding two wars, one in Iraq, one in Afghanistan, "to have squandered both the world's affection and the united spirit of our citizenry in little more than a year represents a tragic triumph of American nationalism over American patriotism. We need a few more patriots. Howard Zinn, the historian, also calls for more patriots, arguing for expanding the prevailing definition of patriotism beyond the narrow nationalism that he says has caused us so much death and suffering. Instead of being feared for our military prowess, Zinn writes, we should want to be respected for our dedication to human rights. If national boundaries should not be obstacles to trade, he says, should they also not be obstacles to generosity and compassion? Now, this kind of patriotism carries risk, the risk of imprisonment, as with Muhammad Ali, who refused to be drafted and sent to Vietnam. About that, Ali said, no, I'm not going 10,000 miles from home to help murder and burn another poor nation simply to continue the domination of white slave masters of darker people all over the world. The real enemy of my people is here. So I'll go to jail. So what? We've been in jail for 400 years. There is risk of imprisonment and, with more genuine patriotism, perhaps even the risk of death. The case of Dietrich Bonhoeffer speaks to this. The German theologian executed by Hitler, his story so eloquently told in the book called True Patriotism, One Man's Struggle Between Individual Conscience and Loyalty to His Country. In his letters, Bonhoeffer wrote that the great masquerade of evil has played havoc with all our ethical concepts. For evil to appear disguised as light, charity, historical necessity, or social justice is quite bewildering. Who stands fast? Only the person who is ready to sacrifice all when called to obedient and responsible action in faith, in exclusive allegiance to God. In 1967, the Reverend Martin Luther King delivered a sermon entitled Beyond Vietnam from the pulpit of the Riverside Church in New York City. He criticized the United States as the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today and implored U.S. citizens to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. U.S. congregations that do nothing more than prophesize smooth patriotism, that remain silent while the United States government proselytizes a dangerous religion rooted in the theology of empire, an American national religion. Such congregations in their silence betray their moral purpose and degenerate into servants of the United States government, sanctifying militarism with the garb of piety. We who feel the call upon our hearts to be patriots can and must do better.